It has been almost 1 year since the murder of George Floyd sparked a widespread reckoning with race. What's changed in South Florida? This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Floyd's murder by a Minneapolis police officer led to protests and demonstrations across the globe and to institutional responses. Diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts were launched, task forces were created, and there were calls to defund the police. So what's changed and what hasn't? What has or hasn't changed in your community since last summer's nationwide demonstrations against racism and injustice? Join our conversation over the next hour at 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576, or share your thoughts at WLRN on Twitter. Our program made possible by Willie the Bee Man, Bee Removal Specialist. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. It's been nearly 1 year since thousands of South Floridians took to the streets to rally against systemic racism and demand social justice reforms. The murder of George Floyd by a Minneapolis police officer sparked a movement that included protests against excessive use of force by police, but it was much larger, encompassing racial and socioeconomic inequalities. It's been called a reckoning. Diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts were launched. Mission and vision statements were revamped. Advisory boards, task forces were created. So what have these efforts led to almost 1 year later? What has or hasn't changed in your community since last summer's nationwide demonstrations against racism and injustice? Share your thoughts, share your experiences with us live on this Friday afternoon. 800-743-WLRN is our phone number to join our conversation. 800-743-9576. You can also share your perspective by tweeting us. Just be sure to tag us at WLRN is our handle. We're going to be spending this entire program talking about the past year and examining what's changing and what hasn't. Dale Holness is our first guest. Broward County Commissioner, District 9, sponsored the ordinance in Broward County to create the county's Racial Equity Task Force. Commissioner Holness, welcome back to WLRN and the Roundup. Nice to have you, sir.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm grateful to share with you where we are.
Please do. What's the status of the group? It was created by a county ordinance in December. Has it been put together?
So we have about 70% of the people are already situated to be on the board. One of the requirements is that they go through a 2-day training program on dismantling racism. So that has held up a little bit, but we are onboarding personnel at the county to deal with this task force also. And we're in a final process of hiring someone who will deal directly with this. We are making some progress. It is slow. Unfortunately, government doesn't move as fast as we'd like it to, but there are processes that you have to go through in order to get there. But this is very serious work. Based on the city financial study that was released last September, it showed that our nation lost $16 trillion in economic output, in GDP, because of these racial inequities. And if we were to fix them over the next 5 years, we could grow our economy by $5 trillion. That means every American would benefit from it. So it is really important work that we do. We also passed last year the Police and Criminal Justice Oversight Board, Review Board, to look at policing also, because that's another part of why we have these inequities. Blacks make up 16% of the population in the state of Florida, yet 49% of those who are in prison are Black in the state of Florida.
Commissioner, regarding the task force, what could be done to speed up that process? The task force hasn't been compiled yet. You mentioned about 70% of it have been nominated. There's 37 members to this task force. So there's about 24 members that have been nominated. So another 12 or so still yet to go. When do you expect to have a meeting of the task force?
So I expect that after our summer break in August, when we come back from summer break in August, that we should be avid meeting started. We break in on June, mid-June for the summer, the commission does, and staff will be working to ensure that when we get back, we'll have that first meeting.
Commissioner, stick with us. I want to welcome Patrick Franklin to our conversation. Patrick is the president of the Urban League of Palm Beach County, co-chair of the City of West Palm Beach's Task Force for Racial and Ethnic Equality. Patrick, thanks for your time today. Your task force was created in July. It met for the first time in October. It submitted three progress reports. It is expected to make a final recommendation or final recommendations, plural, next month. What can you share with Commissioner Holness in terms of the process where he's still waiting for his task force or the Broward County Task Force to meet for the first time? Your recommendations are expected to come out next month.
Tom, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be on your show today. We started back, Mayor Keith James of the City of West Palm Beach established our task force back in July, and we officially got together with my co-chair, Michelle Diffrendorfer, in October, and we've gone through the initial training, and we've had several meetings for the task force, and we have a task force member of 25 members from residents across the city, and we have five subcommittees, which are engaging in criminal justice, education and workforce development, finance, banking and business, health, real estate, and housing. So we've broken down our subcommittees, and our subcommittees are all chaired by members of our task force. And we invite residents to be on this subcommittee. So we are well entrenched right now into our process. And Tom, one of the things that I want to really mention is that we held our first action summit in December, the first week in December. And we had over 300 residents participate on a 4-hour action summit on a Saturday morning. It was very engaging. Mm-hmm. And we got a lot of good input from the residents, which gave us the basis to really identify the issues that our subcommittees have been working on. And as a follow-up, on June 12th, which is right around the corner, is going to be our second action summit. We anticipate that we're going to have over 1,000 residents join us for this event on June 12th.
Will those final recommendations be announced then?
No. We're not ready for final recommendations. We're still accumulating our facts, really working on our issues that we want to present to the mayor. We really identify what we're going to do. What can we do short term? Short term being 3 to 6 months. What are those low hanging fruit areas that we need to really address and work on? And
Patrick, sorry for the interruption, but when do you expect those short-term recommendations then to be released?
I would think the short-term recommendation would be towards the end of the summer, because we want to gather up and gather the data from our action summit on June 12th, and we need a little bit of time to tabulate and work on that. The June 12th summit is going to really affirm the points that we've been working on over the last 6 to 8 months. And when we do that, we will have recommendations, and we are in constant communication with the mayor and his staff to really identify what those are. But right now, we don't have really concrete points, but they're in the work, and okay, we're going to solidify that this summer.
Patrick, you stick with us as well. I want to add a third voice to this conversation as we're talking about what has been the local government response to the reckoning that was sparked by the murder of George Floyd almost 1 year ago. Rahel Welda Jesus is with us. She is the Miami-Dade County Senior Advisor for Innovation and Performance. She happens to oversee the Miami-Dade County Office of Equity and Inclusion. Rahel, thanks for your time today. Much appreciated.
Thank you so much, Tom. Thank you for having me.
When the Miami-Dade County Mayor, Daniela Levine-Cava, announced the creation of this Office of Equity and Inclusion, this is how she described her vision in February.
This office will focus on racial equity, as well as expanding access and opportunity to all groups who've been not at the level playing field.
She went on to describe those groups as women, the LGBTQ community, and people with disabilities. So, Rahel, how goes it achieving this broad mission?
That's right. She's accurate. So we know too many families and people have historically been locked out of economic opportunity. opportunities. So this past year especially showed us more starkly than ever how much racial and economic disparities persist here in South Florida. And that is why she has made, you know, Mayor Cava has made equity a driving principle of her administration. With the new Division of Innovation and Performance, which houses the Office of Equity and Inclusion, a significant focus, a key component of this work, is really looking at equity holistically, right? What are we doing in county government? Are we setting the example? You know, we can't ask our community just to do something that we ourselves are not doing. So what are we doing internally? And how do we convene those who are, you know, active in this space to really come up with a comprehensive equity plan?
During the campaign, the mayoral campaign, Levine Cava, now the mayor, said, quote, we have systemic racism in county government. So, Rahel, what are we, two and a half, three months after the announcement of this office? What have you discovered when it comes to what you're doing in county government as an example?
Well, absolutely. We want to, you know, we have a four-person team, right? We have Jason Smith, who is our Director of Equity and Inclusion, Shireen Floyd, who looks at it from a performance and analytics, and of course, Daniela Vargas, who's our small business, right? So we're looking at it, we're targeting it from different angles. But in terms of the county hiring, we are going department by department, and we are doing audits of each department, right? What are our hiring practices like? And not just hiring, but promotions, right? Opportunity for upward mobility. Do our departments reflect our communities? Does our office reflect our community? And so it's been a very intentional and thoughtful process that Mayor Cava has engaged in.
And when do you expect the results of those surveys to be made public?
Well, we are in the process. I mean, as you know, we have 26 departments.
Yeah.
So it does take time, and we don't want to, you know, we want to make sure we're providing accurate data. We want to make sure we're doing this in a very intentional way. So it is going to take some time. We're hoping, hopefully, by the end, of this year, we can present that.
We're speaking with three government representatives here about the reckoning on race, on socioeconomic equity, social justice, police relations that was sparked after the murder of George Floyd by a Minneapolis police officer almost 1 year ago. You're listening to the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. Join our conversation by calling 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. The three representatives here, one elected, Commissioner Holness, let me bring it back to you in Broward County. You hear not only from yourself, but your colleagues, Patrick Franklin in West Palm Beach and Rahel in Miami-Dade County, stating that these things take time. Are you satisfied with the progress that's been made in Broward County toward this racial equity task force, and what you're hearing from your colleagues north of you in Palm Beach and south of you in Miami-Dade County?
Certainly, I'm not satisfied. I would hope that we would have moved faster, but again, it is a government system that you have to go through certain processes in order to ensure that what you're doing is correct. We can't wait much longer, but I must say this. It didn't take a year or two to get to where we are. It's hundreds of years that have gotten us here. I don't expect that we're going to fix it in a year or 6 months. And the better we are able to organize and get the information and the research done to basically know where we are and clear with data that demonstrates the fact that we know already that these disparities, these inequities exist. We know it's there. It's how do we quantify and document that to then go out and says, here's how we must fix this, which is a part of what must be done. We also have an Office of Equity at the county. We've had it for a while. So we've been working towards this for some time. And part of what we put in place is a program, a two-day program, Dismantling Racism. We've had several hundred people from Broward County participate in that. It's funded in part by the Children's Service Board. Mm-hmm. Because we must look to see how we fix this for the future of our children and for the prosperity of our nation and our competitiveness with the rest of the world. When we lock up so many of our people, oftentimes for minor offenses, we cannot compete fully with the rest of the world because a large percentage of our population cannot be productive. And we must change that.
Yeah. Rahel Well de Jesus in Miami-Dade County, as time progresses, things do take time, certainly, as the commissioner mentioned, in Broward County, when government can be involved. And of course, there are centuries of inequities and other issues that needed to be reckoned with here. But as we move further on, what's to be said about the political will in order to address the difficult questions and perhaps make what may be unpopular decisions ultimately in terms of policies?
That's a great question, Tom. I think the political will is here. It's now. We have, half our board is new. We have a new mayor whose work has been, this has been her life's work. Mm-hmm. You have staff that's dedicated, that come with expertise in this field. And so I think, we're here. This is the time. And she said it herself so many times, the time is now, right? And I think we do see that. And we see that reflected in the policies that are coming out, the initiatives that we're launching, and particularly the county employees that are at the front line.
Richard is calling the program from West Palm Beach. Richard, thanks for listening and calling. You're on the radio. Go ahead.
Yes. I'm really concerned because everything you all are saying is very optimistic and sounds really good. But when you go to Tallahassee, you see the governor and the Senate trying to take away the power, usurp the power from the localities. So the cities and the counties, they're losing the ability to make these decisions. How can you address that with your commissions?
Great question, Richard. I'll put that to Commissioner Holness first. When it comes to this push and pull between local decisions and state control, Commissioner, for equity, racial issues, how do you respond to Richard?
So I'll say to Richard, yes, the Tallahassee will attempt to take away some of our home rule, and they have. On this issue, I believe that we still have the ability to do what we need to do at a local level, so long as we have the political will of my colleagues to put policies forward. In fact, I'll tell you that we passed last year also the Crown Act, which basically prohibits discrimination in Broward County for someone who wear their hair naturally, whether it be through an afro or other type that's natural to someone ethnically. I have two other items coming to the agenda on the 1st of June. One is for us to do a study on our spend. Palm Beach did that a while back. We did it in 2010, but we didn't have the enough data collected on racial profiles in order to basically determine whether or not we could quantify it enough. We knew we had a problem, but we couldn't quantify it because we didn't collect the data that we needed prior to doing the study. So there's a call again on June 1st for us to do an updated study to look at how we're spending our money, whether women and minorities are participating fully.
In terms of contracting for the county?
Contracting right. From the county, yes. Yeah. And also on that agenda is an item that looks internally at how women and minorities are faring with hiring, with promotion, with earnings, within the county. So I believe we have the ability. The problem we have is, again, it takes time to move these things forward because government is, in my mind, far too bureaucratic at times in order to get things done.
In the tug of war between local governments in Tallahassee, if you're interested in that topic, and I tell you, it is a fascinating one. We have a new podcast, Tallahassee Takeover. Just go ahead and search that in your favorite podcast app from WLRN News, Tallahassee Takeover. Be sure to hit subscribe. Fascinating reporting from our news staff on this long tug of war between local control and state control. Patrick Franklin, let me bring you back in from West Palm Beach and the Task Force on Racial and Ethnic Equity. Embedded in Richard's question also is, what are the recommendations going to be used for? What a task force can come up with a report, it can write research, it can put together white papers and PowerPoints and hold Zoom webinars, but it's ultimately up to folks like Commissioner Holness and elected officials to do something. What is the commission going to be used for?
Well, Mayor Keith James is committed to reform and to closing the gap on disparities within the city of West Palm Beach. Our task force for the city of West Palm Beach is focused in on the municipality. And our commissioners are 100% supportive of us, and the mayor is committed, and he's anxious to make these changes that are required. And going back to your previous caller, that is an ongoing issue with the struggle between Tallahassee and not only local county government, but also as it comes down to the city level. Mm-hmm. And I just know from our leaders in the city, the reason this task force is out there is because they are 100% behind it. And I'm looking forward to our recommendations to them and their actions to implement the changes.
Rahel, how about for you? What's the timeline look like? And how does the work from the Miami-Dade County Office of Equity and Inclusion manifest in potential ordinances, policies?
Well, that's right. So, the goal of the Office of Equity and Inclusion is to look at every policy that comes out, with an equity lens, right? And who's being impacted, who's being left out, who needs to be included. And we want to make this real, through our procurement process specifically, which is what we're tackling right now. That's the chief, that's our main priority for the office. We're working on lifting the injunction, for our gender and race-based contracting. We need to go back to the courts and we need to say, look, the data supports that, our Black women and minority-owned businesses are not getting their fair share of the procurement pie. And so we have to be able to, get the data that we need, and then we have to apply that to the policy in our decision-making process at every step of the way.
Rahel Well De Jesus is with Miami-Dade County, Senior Advisor for Innovation and Performance, oversees the Office of Equity and Inclusion. Rahel, thanks for your time today. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
Patrick Franklin, President of the Urban League of Palm Beach County, and is the co-chair of the West Palm Beach Task Force on Racial and Ethnic Equality. Patrick, thanks for sharing your perspective as well.
Thank you, Tom. And I just want to mention that for those who are interested, our June 12th Action Summit, that's coming up on June 12th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. You can go to our website at the City of West Palm Beach and get more information.
June 12th for that latest report to the community there from the West Palm Beach Equity Racial Task Force. Patrick, thanks again. And Dale Holness, Commissioner in Broward County, District 9. Commissioner, always great to have you on. Appreciate your perspective as well.
I'm truly grateful that we're having this discussion. It's something that we should have had a long time ago. Now is a time for us to take action. And I want to make sure every American understand, it's not just women and minorities and Blacks that are affected by this. But when we reduce the ability for someone to live to their fullest potential, we're also taking from everyone.
Yeah. An important conversation, which we will continue to have here today on this program, as a matter of fact, Commissioner, and we'll continue to have on WLRN as well. In fact, still to come, the role of higher education institutions encouraging racial and social justice reforms. What changes have you seen in schools, universities, colleges over the past year to combat social injustice? Join our conversation now, 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks, as always, for listening. As we explore the pursuit for racial and social justice reform in the last year since the death of George Floyd, we're going to turn now our focus on academia, education. What strides have higher education institutions taken to address inequality on campus and in the community over the past year? What role can these institutions play to promote social change in the classroom and beyond? Share your thoughts with us. Are you a student, a teacher, a parent, a faculty member, a staff member? What has your school done differently over the past year? Have you supported it, or is it business as usual? Do you support that? What conversations have you been having with students or children in your life about race and equality over the last year? 800-743-9576 to join our conversation. 800-743-WLRN or at WLRN on Twitter. Alpanye Hudson is with us now, Florida International University Vice Provost for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, Senior Vice President for Human Resources. Alpanye, welcome to the program. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much, Tom Hudson. So good to be here with you all today.
And you too, Madam Hudson. We do share a last name, but we're not related as far as we know. at least.
As far as we know.
Yeah. I suppose maybe if you go far enough back. But anyway, all right, let's talk about the DEI, the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Division at Florida International University. This was created in September to, quote, identify issues of systemic racism, bias, and inequality at FIU. That was according to the school. So what have you found?
Well, thank you so much for asking and the opportunity to share this. I tell you what, we really joined the nation in expressing disdain, right, for the inequities and violence against Black people at the time that we all saw the horrific murder of George Floyd. And at the leading of our esteemed president, Mark B. Rosenberg, we initiated a self-assessment of our own university, our own practices. And one of the outputs from that in the work of the Equity Action Initiative that was spearheaded by Dr. Valerie Patterson, Delrish Moss, Captain Delrish Moss, and myself, were a series of things that we just looked at ourselves to see what was happening in our own area, our own space. And a lot of great things came from that work. As I said, the division itself being created and being created just as an immediate and direct output from those recommendations to ensure oversight, leadership, accountability, and addressing systemic inequities across the enterprise, and employing elements of shared equity leadership that would be a model for us.
When you look to identify issues of systemic racism at FIU, did you find any?
Well, there were things that we can always do better. I mean, the diversity was not new to our university.
Right.
This work that we've been doing, you know, is not new. But what I'll tell you happened was that we determined that we would be intentional, right, about identifying those things that would allow us to make sure that our students were successful, that our faculty and staff were, were working in an environment of belonging. Inclusion was across the board. So, you know, we really took time to listen, to do the research, to, you know, analyze our own demographics to see where we might have had areas of underrepresentation, and outline places and where we could do better, we could do differently.
Let's bring a student voice into the conversation, El Panier. Landon Coles is with us. Landon is the University of Miami Student Government Association president. Landon, thanks for your time today and joining the conversation.
Of course, I'm honored to be here.
UM recently announced that it would be changing the names on three campus buildings, including a music rehearsal hall and a parking garage. Do you support that effort?
Absolutely. I served as the only undergraduate student representative on the historic name change committee. Last summer, in the summer of 2020, we saw the catalyst for a global movement for Black lives, but even more so too, the question began to be asked about how it is that we can better our own university community to support all students that exist and inhabit it. And so that came through the nature of a 15-point racial justice plan for which I was a co-author, as well as crafting a name change committee letter for which we asked the institution to genuinely analyze the names on every structure at the university and how it is, again, that we can best be in the business of proactively supporting every student that walks the campus.
And so absolutely,
Yes, absolutely. I was very satisfied with that effort. But I think, again, it's just the first step that we have to continue to be proactive to stay ahead of the curve.
Names on buildings is just one of many, many things that have been under discussion here. I don't want to pretend that it is something less than that, certainly. El Panier, most buildings at FIU campuses are not named after people. Some are. Do any of those need to be revisited?
We have a wonderful, complement of buildings and, of course, and namings. And one of our most recently named was our Albert E. Dotson building, Albert and Earlene Dotson building. And that highlights the wonderful contributions of our community through the work of Dr. Dotson. And so, you know, certainly there are opportunities to always revisit and review, but that's not been an area of focus for us.
Landon, the university announced that it would conduct a survey on the state of the school's racial climate as part of this kind of self-review. How would you describe UM's racial climate?
Well, I think that UM's racial climate is most definitely intertwined with the broader racial climate of the South Florida area, right? You know, oftentimes we boast about the diversity that we have and that we are the gateway to the Americas. But the problem is not just having the diversity, it's what you're doing with those individuals who are there. What resources are you offering to best support them? How is it that we're trying, again, to be proactive and not reactive when terrible things happen in the external environment to the university? So those are all things that we are working on actively. And that we're going to continue to demand the very best of the community that we care about.
Have there been some tangible changes?
Absolutely. So we have asked the university to fund various student programs, specifically mm-hmm. those of historically underrepresented groups, which they have agreed to. They have formed a commission to name one of our new buildings on campus for the first time after a Black historical figure for the University of Miami. So that's a significant accomplishment. We're working towards other aims as well, including leveraging our economic power within the broader Miami community to support small minority-owned businesses. So those are all things that we are working towards. And again, asking for greater representation in our faculty and staff as well, which impacts students directly in the classroom.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about representation. Elpania, you mentioned representation, and I know in the report that was produced by the group at Florida International University, the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion group that you head up, it spoke a lot about representation in faculty and in the student body. What work have you found needs to be done?
Well, just to piggyback on the the young man, our student speaking, it really is important that we create a climate of belonging. When you think about diversity, that's just a first step, right? Mm-hmm. So you bring people into the room, but when they get there, do our faculty, do our staff, do our students feel like they belong there? How do you feel like you're belonging? Representation matters. Am I seeing myself among the faculty? Are our students seeing themselves? And our external relations team for marketing has been completely alongside of us, working with making sure that our marketing reflects our population. And in those places where we're growing, we're able to attract those faculty, staff, and students to a place that welcomes them, welcomes creativity, welcomes the diversity of thought, welcomes generational diversity, welcomes LGBTQA diversity. Every aspect of diversity we want to see represented at our FIU, and our efforts have been intentional to make that happen.
Elpania Hudson is with us, Florida International University Vice Provost for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, Senior VP for Human Resources. Landon Coles also along with us, the University of Miami Student Government Association President, 800-743-WLRN, here to reach us live on this Friday afternoon on the South Florida Roundup, talking about the role of academia, higher education, promoting racial and social justice reform here in South Florida. 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Elpania, how would you describe the racial climate on campus at FIU?
I think that we are really in a great place. The thing that's most important, I believe, at this point in time is that this is not an instance of a pocket. Our entire university, our senior leadership, our board of trustees are embracing where we're going to make sure that there is inclusion, to make sure that there is belonging, to make sure that there is equity across our enterprise. And I think that we're in a great place and we're moving forward together.
FIU's Equity Action Initiative proposal in September said that the university, quote, still lacks intentional efforts to prioritize diversity and inclusion policies needed to become reflective of the community it serves. Elpania, what are some of those policies you think that FIU needs?
So we have been working very, very closely with our faculty, with our staff, with our students, even creating a diversity council where our council is working on specific areas, looking at policies, looking at practices, looking at how we are hiring employees. And I'll give you a quick instance. Mm-hmm. There is something that's called blind recruitment, right? When I see an application, am I looking at the name and making a determination, or would removing that name from that application allow that candidate to have complete anonymity as they're being considered for employment? And so those are things that are grassroots that we're looking at to determine how they're impacting our efforts for hiring and making sure that, you know, individuals are being qualified based on their merit and not any other factors.
Alpenia mentioned a diversity council. Landon, I think that the Student Government Association created its own diversity, equity, and inclusion council on campus at UM, didn't it?
Yes, and I actually served as the director last year before becoming president for that. So last year was its inaugural year.
And so what did it accomplish?
Absolutely. So the council was born out of this idea that we as student government have to be in the business of representing all students, that we know that equality is sameness, but equity is fairness, and that certain groups need additional support. And so that council, it came together this last year. We supported various spaces. We comprised different letters. We advocated to the university administration upon the various issues that we were dealing with, specifically those that were impacting us outside of our community. We fostered different dialogues, specifically that with our UMPD. Police force on campus. So we did a lot of different things, and we're still working towards more about how that's going to take shape within our organization. And this year, as president, I have moved it to the center of my agenda to oversee all of our internal affairs for student governments that were, again, we're really in the business of creating a climate of belonging where students feel that they have all the resources necessary and are endowed with the ability in order to be able to succeed.
800-743-WLRN to join our conversation, 800-743-9576. Alexandria in Miami is joining us on line one. Alexandria, thanks for listening and calling. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. I was just wondering, because I'm from Miami, Florida, born and raised, and I know that so many of us are Hispanic here, and we're not exactly a minority in Miami, but, you know, we are still a minority in this country, and sometimes I do feel like we are underrepresented in these academic institutions. So I just wanted to know what FIU, because I'm a student at FIU, like plans to do to help women of, you know, Hispanic origin.
Great question, Alexandra. Thanks for asking it. Alpenia, how do you respond to the Panther there?
Thank you so much, Alexandra, for the question and for being a Panther. We have been very, very diligent and intentional about recruiting specifically Hispanics, because we find that there's underrepresentation of Hispanics in higher ed in terms of tenured faculty positions. We have an office for to advance women equity and diversity. They've been doing great work. That, as I said, prior to, diversity is not new to FIU. So prior to, this office has been doing work to increase diversity among women, particularly, and Hispanic women and specifically. And I would say, I believe it, as I'm thinking through our numbers, we have a 14% increase among women in our in the STEM areas. And so that's a wonderful thing. And so we have very intentional programs at the university to increase Hispanics, especially among tenured faculty at the university.
Can you give us a set? You gave us one example there in the STEM representation. Perhaps there's another policy or practice that comes to mind, Alpenia, that kind of answers Alexandria's curiosity about representation of Latino women, of herself.
Well, surely. Thank you. So through that office, the AWET office, we have what we call bystander training, right? And so we prepare our individuals who sit on search committees to identify areas of unconscious bias that would prevent anyone, you know, and certainly as we're talking about Hispanic women, prevent anyone from having a fair opportunity in an interview process. So those are programs or things that we put in place that we can specifically highlight and make sure that we're able to measure our effectiveness as we are recruiting women for faculty positions, as well as administrative and other areas. So our efforts are indeed intentional around recruiting women in STEM and women across the enterprise and Hispanics in faculty roles, whether they be male or female.
Let me squeeze in another call here with as we're talking about higher education. Joseph is in Sweetwater. Joseph, thanks for calling.
Yes, how are you? Great show, great timely topic. My wife and I are born and bred Miami for the close to 70 years. She's had the privilege of teaching at both FIU and University of Miami. She has found that in her teachings, the most recent teachings at FIU, that she found the best meld and the best mix and the best interrelationship, and not just the races, but the religions. And she said that in the last two or three years that she's been at FIU, it's very noticeable and that it's always a top administration priority. So I wanted to make that comment because she's there, she's been in the battlefield, and I She sees it up close.
Yeah, she's in the classroom on campus.
For the last year, she's been Zoom, overseeing the classroom.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But for the last
indeed.
2 years before that, she's been right in the classroom, right in the thick of things, and she finds head over heels. She feels FIU's made the best and most effective stride.
Well, Joseph, you're making El Panier's day, I imagine, by that conversation.
Thank you, Joseph.
Yeah, appreciate that call from Sweetwater.
High five in the virtual world.
There you go. Landon Coles, I want to give you the last word here as a student government association president at the University of Miami. What role do college university students in this community play in this conversation, do you think?
Absolutely. Beautiful question. I think our role is this. We have to be willing to speak bitter truth and radical candor, that we as students have the duty, the agency, and the responsibility to demand the best of the universities that we attend. Oftentimes, there's been kind of like this ongoing national debate, specifically as it relates to this idea of being able to criticize your country and your communities that you occupy. And it is in my view that it is the most patriotic thing and the most symbolic thing out of love that you can do, again, to demand the very best of your community. So going forward, as I prepare to serve over this next year as a student government president for the University of Miami, I'm going to continue to push the envelope. I'm going to continue to ask, to demand, to advocate on behalf of the students and be willing to stand in that uncomfortable truth so we as a university community can grow.
Landon Coles is the University of Miami Student Government Association president, and El Panier Hudson is the Florida International University Vice Provost for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. Landon, thank you for your time. El Panier, I'll see you at the family reunion, the Hudson family reunion, right?
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Appreciate thank both you. Of your time and comments. Thanks so much. We're going to continue the conversation here on the South Florida Roundup. Stick with us. 800-743-WLRN. 800-743-9576. We're back on the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. The murder of George Floyd by Minneapolis police was the catalyst that mobilized people across the world to rally against systemic racism. In South Florida, people of different races, ages, socioeconomic backgrounds marched in the streets, spoke out against social injustice, and pushed for reform. Community organizers launched grassroots efforts to keep the conversation going through community forums, social media groups, and rallies. So what's the state of those efforts nearly 1 year after they pushed for racial and social justice reform? 800-743-WLRN to join our conversation. 800-743-9576. Jasmine Rogers is with us, community organizer of BLM Broward. Jasmine, welcome back to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. It's nice to be back a year later.
Yeah, in fact, it was last summer. It was June. When you were on this program. Back then, there were calls to defund the police. We spoke to you back then, and this is what you told us.
So what we're calling for is a reinvestment of those monies, that the dollars, into social work, into domestic violence prevention, into responding to mental health in our communities, into curbing homelessness.
Now, the calls to defund the police echoed across society. They've been widely rejected and used as even political leverage during the 2020 political campaigns. Was it a mistake? Was that effort, that rhetoric, a mistake 1 year later?
Absolutely not. I reject the notion that those three words caused us to lose any candidate or any election. We see up and down the ballot across issues that folks want more progressive values and more progressive policies, regardless of what their parties are. And at the end of the day, regardless of those three words, the truth of the matter is we have to reimagine how we're looking at public safety. We can't keep going in the direction that we are, investing so much in policing and not in other services.
Ariel Lett is also with us. Ariel is a lawyer, a civil rights attorney here in South Florida. Welcome to the program. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
Ariel, how do you gauge the past year in efforts toward racial inclusion, efforts toward police accountability, even on the financial side, as Jasmine mentioned?
Well, there's been a lot of progress, obviously. After a long hiatus here in Miami-Dade, we do have now a police oversight panel from the community. Also, we've had quite a lot of community support. I myself have had a lot of people approach me, talk with me, both white and black and everything in between about what can I do to help. That wasn't done before, you know, last year's movement. And so we just have to make sure that we're continuing to make it a movement and not a moment. And there's a lot of people in our communities that are notable leaders of civil rights, such as a longtime leader, H.T. Smith, and mm-hmm. And others in our community as well.
You mentioned the police oversight effort, which was renewed and approved by the Miami-Dade County Commission over the summer, but that panel has not met, at least through April.
That's correct, and that's something that we need to, you know, again, as you know, the previous commentators have mentioned before, you know, government moves kind of slowly. So, you know, it's on us, you know, as civil rights attorneys in the community to make sure, you know, we continue to push that and do what we can to be proactive and not just reactive.
I appreciate you being such an astute listener during the conversation with Broward County Commissioner Holness earlier on in the program, Ariel. Let's add another voice to this trio. Natalie Robinson Bruner is with us, so YWCA South Florida Division Director in Racial and Gender Equity Advancement. Natalie, thanks for your time and welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me here. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
We're talking about community activism and the role that it's played in this reckoning over the past year. The YWCA is not new to this this part of the conversation. The YWCA's mission statement has included the words eliminating racism since 2009. So how do you gauge the past year?
I think it has been an awakening for those who have been sort of sitting on the fence to really take the time to step up and learn about what's been happening. We saw a great push with, you know, our 21-day challenge, where individuals just took the time to sit and learn about the different aspects when it comes to systemic racism in an effort to push them from education into action. And so I think it's been a turn in sort of helping people that have been on the fence to actually become allies.
Yeah. Jasmine, you've worked with the Miami Workers Center on issues of gender justice as well. What advances have you seen for the rights of the trans community and other gender nonconforming groups over the past year during this broader reckoning?
Well, what we've seen specifically in Florida is a rolling back of equity for LGBTQ folks, specifically for trans folks. In this most recent legislative session, we saw the ban on trans girls in sports, which is a ban that nobody asked for. It's not anything that has raised any concerns here in the state of Florida. And yet it created a huge firestorm of controversy of people that were saying, let kids play. And again, we always see the attacks on abortion access in the state year after year. So it seems like in our current government, we're just getting more and more restrictive and rolling back more and more of the rights that we hold dear.
We also saw legislators respond to the protests and demonstrations over the summer. Legislation passed and Governor Ron DeSantis signed into law new crimes when it comes to rioting. But also included in that law, Ariel, was a measure that allows the state to overrule local police budgets. How has the past year influenced these kinds of legislations that we've seen here in Florida?
Well, we know that this anti-protest bill, I call it this instead of the anti-riot bill, is a direct reflection, direct response to the protests last year. And as you mentioned, it adds a lot of laws such as aggravated rioting, mob intimidation, anytime anyone over a group of three people are out protesting. It also gives clear and civil immunity for anybody, including racists, who will drive their cars in through crowds of protesters. Mm-hmm. So like the incident that happened a couple of years ago is in Charlottesville, where the man drove his car into a crowd of counter protesters during a white supremacist ally and killed a woman. Now, if this happens here in Florida, there's no civil remedy for that family who lost their loved ones.
And so how do you then frame the understanding over the past year with the progress that you've identified and then these legislative efforts, which clearly you seem opposed against or opposed to?
Well, Absolutely. Well, as Jasmine mentioned, you know, there's been a lot. This is part of the larger response by the current administration to quiet our voices, and we just have to hold strong and let them know that our voices won't be quieted. We'll be challenging illegal bills such as this new anti-protest law that they've put into place.
I have just 30 seconds left, but I'd like to hear from Jasmine and from Natalie. Natalie, what's next for the YWCA in this conversation?
That's a great question. So,
I'm sorry to give it such short time.
No problem. On June 3rd, we're going to be talking about our past of what we've done over the 100 years, our partners now, and then what we have planned for the future. So just go on our website, ywcasouthflorida.org, and you can sign up to NEXT and really learn more about it.
And Jasmine, what are your hopes for the next year?
My hopes and my vision is that folks won't stop taking to the streets, because we know that this is not the end of white supremacy or anti-blackness, so that we'll continue strong in the streets, protesting and pushing back against legislation and bringing more people along with us.
Jasmine Rogers, community organizer at BLM Broward, thank you for your time. Natalie Robinson-Bruner, YWCA, South Florida, and Arielle Lett, civil rights attorney, managing attorney of Let Law. Thanks to all three of you for joining this conversation here on the Florida South Florida Roundup. It is produced by Andrea Perdomo and Leslie Ovalle. Engagement editor is Katie Lepre. Lance Dixon is our digital editor. WLRN's director of radio operations and the program's technical supervisor is Peter J. Maritz. Richard Ives answers the phones. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for calling, listening, and supporting public radio. This program is made possible by Willie the Bee Man, bee removal specialist.